Thank you very much for having me here. So yeah, I will be talking about the categorification of certain projections between affine and finite Hecke algebra. So before talking about the categorification, I will talk about the algebraic picture that I will try to categorify. So the easiest like realm where you can see the homomorphism I will be talking about is the realm of braid groups. So you have a regular braid group on n strands, which can be exhibited as a fundamental group of the configuration space of n points in the complex plane C, well, with respect to some base plane zeta. You have an affine braid group, which again be exhibited as a fundamental group on the configuration space, but now of n points in C star, say with the same base plane zeta, and then embedding of C star to C gives a homomorphism of the corresponding braid groups, which I would know phi. So if you draw a picture, say a moving configuration in a plane, so it moves from here to here, say something like that. So this will be an element of Bn. And then if you add this like a red pillar in the middle, you will get a moving configuration in C star. So now if you have an element of P1 of confn of C star, you just take away this red pillar and you end up with a moving configuration in C. So, and this is how this homomorphism arises, like in the most simple form. So this was on the level of braid group, but it's easy to see that this descends to the homomorphism of the corresponding Hecke algebras, which are just quotient of the group algebras of these braid groups over some rings. And so this I will now describe. So let W just Sn, so this is a finite Weyl group of type A. This is generated by a set of the simple reflections, S1, Sn minus 1. Now we have Wn affine. So from now on, I started with the regular affine braid group, but from now on, I will be working with extended affine Weyl groups and affine Hecke algebras. This differs by you take regular affine braid group and externally tensored Z. So this will be an extended affine Weyl group for GLN. And so you have corresponding Hecke algebras, HN affine extended. So these are algebras over the ring Z, V, V inverse. Unital algebras, and so HN is generated by elements TS. S are simple reflections. Here they are, and I will denote TI for simplicity, TSI. And there are familiar relations, so we have Ti and Tj commute when they are far away, we have a braid relations. And we have a quadratic relation. Something like that. So this is the finite Hecke algebra. And extended affine Hecke algebra is generated again by elements TS, S and in S. And elements theta I from 1 to n. So what are the relations? Ti generate finite Hecke algebra. Hn. And then I need to specify the relations for theta I and how they interact with T. So we have theta I. So the different thetas commute. And also we have the following relation. Theta, say, I, S I, theta. I plus 1. Si theta j equals theta j si when I minus when j is not I or I plus 1. This thing is called extended affine Hecke algebra. So these things, theta I, they commute with each other. And in fact, they generate just a group algebra of a lattice over Z VV inverse. So for X in Zn, say I will write theta X to be theta 1 x1 x2 n xn. So we have an inclusion from hn to hn affine, which happens all the time for all types. So I wrote relations for type A, but you can do the same thing in any type. And in fact, for any root datum, you have an extended affine Hecke algebra. But what is special to this type A case and even the GLN case is that you have a homomorphism, say phi small from HN affine to HN. It is uniquely defined by the fact that phi of theta 1 is 1. And so this is the incarnation of the homomorphism I was describing here, but on the level of Hecke algebra. It's also determined by the fact that phi of Ti is Ti. So now it's completely determined. Yep?
Tracking in the second to last line, is it ti theta I ti or theta I?
Oh yes, thank you very much. So this is our t.
And that really is ti, not ti inverse.
Yes. That's ti not inverse. Yeah. So let's track it down a bit. So where does theta 2 say go? Phi of theta 2 is by this relation here is phi of t1 theta 1 t1, so this is t1 squared, and etc. Phi of theta 3 will be t2 t1 squared t2. Phi of theta k is tk minus 1 tk minus 2, etc. t1 here squared, t2, tk minus 1. So these elements are familiar from representation theory of finite Hecke algebra Hn. So I will denote them by, so this will be L2, L1 is just 1, this is L3, Lk. So this Li are so-called multiplicative Justice Murphy elements. Of Hn. So in particular, Li commute with each other, and they generate a very large commutative subalgebra of Hn. Well, and from the work of Vershik and Okunkov, well, and Justice, Murphy, and Young, you can actually describe all the combinatorics of representation theory of like SN or HN using this commutative subalgebra. So this is quite nice. And so this is a part of, I guess, motivation why this homomorphism is nice. Because, well, it exhibits some mysterious commutative subalgebra in HN as an image of a very familiar commutative subalgebra. In the extended affine Hecke algebra.
Can you remind me these Justice Murphy elements in terms of the braid group? They have some explanation in terms of like doing something to a braid, like wrapping it around.
Yeah, some specs that you can. I don't know if like all my crossings will be correct, but there should be some specs that.
That's like L2. Or L.
L something. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The sign that Theo was asking about is the fact that you go around those rather than going in front and then back in front.
Yeah, and these elements, they actually commute already inside the braid group. Okay, so I will need a little more algebra.
Sorry, and is it clear how this homomorphism, before you erase that?
Yes,
sir. Is it clear how that homomorphism that you wrote of braid groups gives me those Justice Murphy elements? I mean, because this is that, you said that this homomorphism phi is related to that homomorphism phi?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to, what's like simpler thing to say than to just insert the pillar here and.
Okay, sorry.
So now I will need to talk about the centers of HM affine and HM. So we have the following theorem due to Bernstein. That the center of HM affine is a free ZVV inverse module with basis given by, so if you take say lambda with basis z lambda, where lambda are in zn and satisfy lambda 1 greater than or equal to lambda 2, etc. So these are dominant weights in the weight lattice of GLN, and z lambda is sum over the Weyl group. Theta W of Yep. Okay, I guess this is correct. Okay, and so we have a similar theorem by Dipper and James. So I'm not 100% sure that this is Dipper and James over Z, but I think that's true that this is Dipper and James over Q. So center of HN is the same as a set of symmetric polynomials in Li. And Li, I guess. Okay, so finally we get the following algebraic picture. So we have Z of extended affine Hecke algebra embedded to the extended affine Hecke algebra. Here we have the surjective homomorphism phi to HN. Here we have the center. So this is the picture that we will try to categorify. In terms of known categorifications of the two horizontal arrows that I will now describe. So I will now describe them in precise terms, technically, but roughly categorification of this thing, which I will be working with, is a bounded constructible derived category of B equivalent derived category in the flag variety. So this is the lower right arrow. So here, similarly, we have a bounded Ivachorian equivalent category on the affine flag variety. I will describe all the terms I'm using in more detail. So this thing is categorified by the category of pair of sheaves, G of O equivariant, pair of sheaves on the affine Grassmannian. And so there is a functor like this. And this thing will be categorified by derived category of character sheaves. So let's see, character sheaves. And there is a functor like that. So first of all, what are all these things here? Yeah, so I should have mentioned earlier that theorem of Bernstein is valid for all for all root datum. And this doesn't make sense outside of type A. Okay, and so all these categorifications, they also make sense for all algebraic groups G. This projection again does not make sense outside of type A, so I will fix from now on G is GLN. So now B subset G is a Borel subgroup. So K will be a field of Laurent power series, and all inside K will be integer subring C of t. So, and I is an Eva Hoyer subgroup. So what's that? This is a evaluation. So you have an evaluation map from G of O to G, evaluation at V equals 0. And so Eva Hoyer is a preimage of the Borel subgroup. Okay, so a few words why these two things are categorifications of the finite Hecke algebra and the affine Hecke algebra. So finite Hecke algebra, if we say that v squared equals q, where q is the power of a prime, then the finite Hecke algebra can be described as an algebra of BB equivariant complex valued functions on GLN over the finite field where multiplication is given by convolution. So like from the times of Grothendieck, and this is now like the main motivation, I guess, behind the geometric representation theory, is the categorification of such a function is a constructible sheaf. So this is my brief explanation why this should be considered a categorification of a finite Hecke algebra. And the same explanation holds here. So from the work of Eva Hoyer and Matsumoto, we know the similar description of like the algebra of Eva Hoyer B equivariant functions, say on the PID group, as an affine Hecke algebra. So this is motivation for these two things. So here, by the geometric Satake, equivalence, this category of pervious sheaves on this affine Grassmannian, this is equivalent just to the category of representations of GLN. Okay, and the category of representations of GLN is an obvious categorification for the ring of symmetric Laurent polynomials. So this thing, character sheaves, well, this is a certain subcategory of G adjoint equivariance sheaves on G. And so if you have functions on the group G with algebra structure given by convolution, then like central objects, central elements inside this algebra are, of course, G adjoint equivariant functions or on your group. So this is why we consider, well, and this at least for a finite group, this thing is spanned by characters, and so this character sheaves, they correspond to characters exactly. So this is why we take this for a categorification of the center. So this functor here is given by Gretz-Goris nearby cycles constructions. So this thing here is this functor here is called Harishchandra functor. So it was defined by Ginzburg and Lustig. And Bezrukhabnikov, Fingelberg, and Ostrich. In the settings of abelian categories, proved that the thing actually gives you an embedding of a not an embedding. So this category on the abelian level actually gives you the Drinfield center of this category, and the similar results hold in some another like technical derived setting for. By the work of Nadler and Bensley. So that's this. Okay, so now what do we want? What do we want from the categorifications that we're trying to construct? So what? So inside Hecke algebra, HN, so it contains an it contains elements TW for W in Weyl group. So these are given by like product TS1 TSIK, where SI1 SIK equals W is a reduced expression. So now these elements, they have a natural like categorical counterpart here. So categorification of TW, I will denote delta W. So inside T, so these are Schrick extensions from Bruchhausen's. Shift. Okay, so this thing is a homomorphism of algebras. So we would expect this thing to be a monoidal functor, and so we want the finite Hecke algebra inside here to map identically here. So in particular, we know where we want where we want these elements, all the elements theta I, to map, because these LIs are given by products of different TIs. So we would expect their like there leaves their categorifications to be products of the same generators. Okay, so for example, L 3, we want to be categorified by something like delta S 2. S1, delta S1, S2. And we also want this kind of expressions to hold. So we want some central sheaves here in. By central, I currently mean just that they come from this category, satisfying something like, so we want an element. For example, we have a central element S, I will denote it by SV, which is the sum of theta 1 and theta n. So this element SV, it actually corresponds on the geometric Satake equivalence. It corresponds to the standard representation of n-dimensional representation of GLN. So we have such a sum. So we want the corresponding sheaf SV to have a filtration by sheaves corresponding to Li. Okay, so this thing's mapped to Li, so we want an object categorifying the sum of Li to have an actual filtration by sheaves categorifying Li. So these are things we expect from such a functor. Okay. And now, now I will describe how I will construct at least a part of this arrow. So, for example, I want a functor for grep GLN. This is what I want. To the category of G equivariant sheaves on G. To the G equivariant derived category. So how to construct such a functor? So first, let me formulate the following simple lemma. So assume that C is a symmetric monoidal category such that C is Karubian. Meaning that images of all projectors exist in C. Okay, then this allows us to define sure functors. S lambda in C. So we just take a case power of some object, symmetric group acts on this case power because this is a symmetric monoidal category. Now we take a projector to the corresponding isotypical component, and by Karubian property, we have its image. So this will be our sure functor. So for example, we can talk about exterior powers, symmetric powers. Okay, so now assume that we have an object satisfying the following conditions. So first condition is that its n plus first exterior power is 0. And second condition is that its nth exterior power is invertible. Then we have a functor f from rep GLV, so where V is some n-dimensional vector space, let's denote it Vn, to C that sends V to X. So how to construct such a functor? We'll take any representation of GLA. So this is it can be described as a sure functor of the standard representation tensored with some power of the determinant. So that's exactly what we do. That's exactly what we do here. We take the corresponding sure functor of X and tensor it with the corresponding power of the determinant, which we can do because determinant is invertible. And so this thing actually guarantees that this will be a functor from GL. So we want to.
I forgot, is this category DG or G, is it genuinely symmetric? Or?
I will talk about it right now. Yeah, so there is a technical difficulty with it. Hmm. So yeah, let's talk about D, E, G, O, G. So generally, on the category, on the constructible derived category on G, we have a convolution functor M star convolution given by the following formula. So A convolve with B is a shrink push forward with respect to the multiplication map of exterior product of A and B. So we have G okay, and so this defines as convolution. Now, thanks to the G covariant structure, this becomes a braided monoidal category. Now, when the centralizer is symmetric, when the centralizer of any G in G is connected, then category of G covariant perverse sheaves on G, this becomes a symmetric monoidal category. And so the convolution here is given by just taking zeros perverse cohomology of the convolution we defined before. Okay, so this is a symmetric monoidal category, not the full derived category. Well, I actually don't know. Well, I don't expect the full derived category. So GLN has connected centralizers. So the category of G covariant perverse sheaves with this convolution is a symmetric monoidal category.
I don't understand that, but convolution of perverse you're only taking H0.
Yes. Yeah, so what happens for the derived category is that the square of the braiding is zero on the cohomology. But that does not mean that square of braiding is unit on the cohomology, but that does not mean that it's a unit. So I actually don't know. So before I thought that this is true for BG of G, but now I don't know if this if the braiding structure can be fixed. But for what I will be talking in the next part of the talk, this is enough.
So do you have any
gauge theory
interpretation of
gauge
theory?
No.
These statements. I mean, the symmetric monoidal category is it a category of lines in some sort of theory? This is a question to you.
Yeah. So there is a paper of So we have the following theorem, which is joint with Roman Bezrukavnikov. So it will take some additional time to set up. So let N P tilde be equal to the cotangent bundle of just E n minus 1 and exhibited as a parabolic Springer resolution. So what's this is that we take P, big P, to be the maximal parabolic subgroup of GLN fixing the first vector. Okay, and NP is a set of pairs G and X in G over P such that G lies in X U P X inverse, where U P is a unipotent radical of P. So here it is. So these are matrices which are zero everywhere except the diagonal and uppermost row. On the diagonal, they have all ones, and the uppermost row can be any, well, with the exception of the first cell which lies on the diagonal. Okay, so we have this variety, and we have a parabolic Springer sheaf. So let Sp be the push forward of the constant sheaf on NP shifted by two dimensions of UP. Then, so first of all, this sheaf is perverse. And it satisfies the properties listed there. Lambda n plus 1, sorry, is lambda n plus 1 of spur p equals 0. And now I need a little bit more technical setup to explain what the second property would mean. But for now, I will just say that lambda n spur p tensor. Sorry, convolved with delta, which I will explain what is invertible in the category of character sheaves. So I will explain what this, but the important thing to know is that after tensoring with this delta hat, this thing becomes a character sheaves and the whole convolution is perverse and invertible in the category of character sheaf. So this is a corollary from the lemma written there. We now have a function from RepGLN to perverse sheaves on G, to character sheaves. I'm sorry. So yeah, now let me explain a little bit what this delta means. So for this, I will start with a toy example. So let G be equal to GL1, so just C star. Okay. Then we have a convolution on the category of sheaves on C star. But say we want to consider only subcategory of consider the subcategory locally constant sheaves on C star with unipotent monodromy. Okay, so this roughly correspond. This exactly correspond to from passing to all from all sheaves on G to character sheaves. For this particular G, so character sheaves are or unipotent character sheaves are locally constant sheaves with unipotent monodromy. So such sheaves they naturally correspond to. To the pair vector space M and the operator N which is N nilpotent. So by just taking monodromy at one. Then convolution, so A star B will correspond to taking tensor product of the corresponding modules MB over the ring of power series of T, where this ring acts on this module by just T acting as N. So since L N is nilpotent, this is defined. Well, this is well defined. Now, in this category, so with respect, if we just consider C of T modules, then in the category of C of T modules, unit is just C of T itself. But C of T, when we consider the corresponding local system, this will not be a finite dimensional local system. So this will be an infinite dimensional local system. So, and moreover, if we take the corresponding infinite dimensional local system, so let me define it by D. So this is inverse limit of the local systems corresponding to K of T over T. Okay, and so this is local system corresponding to this. Now, if I take any sheaf, so A be any sheaf in D of C star, then now A convolved with D will be actually, well, in the derived category of this, in the derived category D unipotent of C star. So this is a subcategory derived of all category. Of all derived category with of sheaves whose cohomology is locally constant with unipotent monodromy. So this convolution with this pro unit actually defines you a projection to this locally constant category. So this is exactly what is going on here. There is an analogous sheaf on GLN which defines your projection from the whole thing to the category of character sheaves, and just as in this case, this sheaf with which we convolve serves as a unit in the category of character sheaves.
And you're saying that this is that sheaf, right?
What?
I mean, you're saying that this parabolic Springer sheaf is that sheaf which defines projection to
a... No. I'm just saying that it convolved with the projection will be invertible in the category of character sheaves. This determinant is not invertible by itself,
I see.
But when projected to the category of character sheaves.
What does it look like before you project?
Pretty nice. So this will be just a constant sheaf on the nilpotent comb. So we actually can compute all the exterior powers, and these are basically all the sure functors that will be perverse. So the nth exterior power will be just a constant sheaf, well, shifted constant sheaf on the nilpotent comb, which is a nice feature of this construction. This is what I call the partial categorification of this thing. And now partial because we want a monoidal functor from here to here, but we actually got just a monoidal functor to the category of pairwise sheaves, not to the derived category.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I missed the construction. So the construction is that you have this parabolic Springer sheaf, you have its sure functors, and then you do what? So you find your functor from representation G and the pairwise sheaves on G.
Yeah.
What do you do again? So.
So I take a standard representation.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to evaluate the functor on any representation.
Yes. Where does the standard representation go?
To the the standard representation goes to the parabolic Springer sheaf convolved with delta.
And delta means, and this delta hat is what?
Is a pro unit in the category of character sheaves.
I see.
So this will be actually an infinite local system. But
so which is the same as to say that this parabolic spring is shifted projectile.
Yeah, to character sheet. But for it, again, this will not be a character sheet. This will be a pro character sheet. But that's fine.
So that functor will actually code some pro
object. Pro object, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to be honest, I said that I sweep some technical details over the rug, but actually when I work with this category, I'm also working with a certain pro completion. Well, with monodromic pro completion. So this is what you would expect. And yeah, and again, precisely for this reason, because I don't have a unit if I don't consider pro completion. Okay, so now what can be done further to...
Would you instead work with actual covariant category, but work with some indo objects there? So would that be possible?
What do you mean?
Just consider reading monastic B covariant sheets on G mod B, but allow some infinite... Because it's not the bounded derived category, but consider some unbounded derived category.
No, so this is not an issue of bounded or unbounded. Yeah, I can work... The category, sorry. But the casual dual picture to the complete to the completed category is just this B honest B equivalent category.
No bounded.
Huh?
With bounded.
With bound, yeah. Yeah, I could do this, but somehow this Harishchandra functor that I didn't write, it's easier to work with it. For monodromic case, and in a monodromic case, you need to complete. Okay, so what can be, what else can be done? So there is a general theorem of Bezrukhovnikov. That says that this affine Heike category, it has a coherent incarnation. Namely that if we consider ST to be a Steinberg variety, so this is, we have G is the Lie algebra of G. G tilde is a Grothendieck-Springer resolution. Simultaneous resolution. We have Steinberg is G times G like this. Category. Bounded derived category of G covariant coherent sheaves on Steinberg has a natural monoidal structure. Well, because this thing is given as some square over G, so when you have a variety like this, you can always consider convolution just by pulling back to the third Cartesian power and then projecting. So now, if you consider this bounded derived category of sheaves, which are set theoretically supported on nilpotent called N, on the nilpotent cone N, and actually you need some completion also, but I will not talk about it. So this thing is equivalent as monoidal triangulated categories to this affine Heike category here. So yes, this is a theorem of Bezrukhovnikov. And while proving it, what difficulty do we have here is that we don't know any geometric reason why there should be such a functor. We only know some we only have an algebraic reason. Maybe the object to which like natural objects in the upper category map are also natural, but like we don't have any ways to construct a geometric functor here. And this was exactly the situation with this categorification. So it was known, that there is a functor on some subcategories, and it was known to which objects we want some object on the coherent side to act. And then when we axiomatically say that this object maps to this object and satisfy some additional properties, some additional compatibility, then actually we have a functor from the coherent affine Hecke category to some other category in the case of Bezrukavnikov's theory, affine Hecke category.
It's G of K, not G, right?
G of K, yeah, sorry, thank you. Ivachori invariant shifts on.
Are these endomorphisms of some object in geometric Lagrange, in local geometric Lagrange?
Yes. Well, this is yeah. So as I wrote it here, since G was GLN, I didn't write any length lengths dualities here. But
okay, so dual,
in general,
dual on the
left. Yeah. Yeah. In.
No, but to answer your question, you don't need. It's not about length dualities. If you want to write an endomorphism, so. You want to write this towards some category with the action of G of K, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, this is automatic.
But then I'm asking.
You can see that it's just all G modules on G of K mod I. As on that thing, there is an action of G of K, and kind of more or less tautological, if you can see this endomorphism of G of K.
But is this equivalent then, the equivalence between two home spaces of endomorphism for the same of dual objects?
No. I don't think so. I mean, if you can see that the category of all D modules on G of K mod on the fine flag right, I don't think it has any coherent interpretation. Definitely. I mean, for GLM, if you can see, if you replace the flag variety by G of all, conjecturally, there is some coherent interpretation, but it's kind of tricky, which you can actually deduce from some of the field theory considerations. But for flag variety and for GLN, I don't believe that this thing would be, because they're all G modules on G of K. I don't think we can interpret this as.
But it would have an infinite Lagrangian limit of some sort.
I'm sorry?
So that object would have
an infinite. No, well, true. I mean, it will have some image and limit, but somehow I don't think it has any explicit description.
I was just wondering if the lessons.
I guess I don't, I just am not aware of
it. That.
Sorry?
I was just wondering if the left-hand side would be endomorphisms of that object.
Well, that will be so automatically, but the point is, we don't know what, I mean, it's not that he knows. I think nobody knows how to describe this category.
Okay, I'll continue. So, what? I can now formulate the main result of this partial categorification is that there is a theorem. There is a monoidal functor. From the perfect derived subcategory on Steinberg, well supported on N again. So this is a perfect subcategory of this thing to the finite Hecke category. Which sends the objects that we want to objects that we want, and it is compatible with this rep GLN action on both sides. So, yes, this is.
Can I ask you a question? Somehow,
yeah.
When you were doing what you were doing here, you chose this maximal parabolic P, but in principle, what happens if you choose the opposite parabolic? So it's not conjugate, so formally, so is it correct to get a different fun transformation? I mean, your spring is sheaf, I think is.
Yeah.
Is
well, yeah, you can map, so you can take. I may correct myself later, but I think if you choose the opposite, you will get like a dual, to what corresponds to a dual representation.
I see.
So,
but you get the same push forward sheaf.
Ah, yeah, that probably is correct.
Yeah, I mean they're
yes.
Is it obvious?
Yes, it
it's
is.
It's not obvious, but it's not hard. I mean, it's like.
No, I
believe,
yeah.
Forget about the structure, they are the same or something.
Yeah, yeah, if you choose, yeah, that's right, I'm sorry, this is stupid. Yeah, you can choose another parabolic will also give. But so, like, if you want to get a correct filtration by this Utzes Murphy sheaves, you need to choose one or the other. Which one? I don't remember. But so this is.
Wait. But I think from what Ben is saying, it follows that it doesn't matter which one.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But the proof is simpler if you choose it in one way. Yeah. So the reason is that this Utzes Murphy sheaves are actually constructed of the set of lowest weight representatives of cosets of the Weyl group by some parabolic. So if you choose this parabolic, then you will have a correct set of lowest length representative of the cosets. But yeah, I think I'm out of time anyway, since that's the main result. So. Yeah, so the construction mimics what's happening here. So you can formulate what's happening here in some axiomatic terms. Like you need, say you want to construct a functor from coherent Hecke category to some category C, which is like triangulated monoidal. Then there is a list of things you want. First, you want a functor from representations of G. Then you want the action of the structure sheaf of a torus on this category, which in our case comes from the monodrome. Then you want like line bundles mapped to some objects, and then have filtrations of the central objects by these line bundles. And this should be compatible with the action of the structure sheaf on T. And then if all is satisfied, you get a functor from the perfect category on the Steinberg to your category C. So, and that's what is done here. Then if you want a functor from the full coherent category on the Steinberg, you need some additional properties. For example, that this functor that you constructed has a finite homological dimension. Well, I mean, no, sorry, not a finite. It's homologically bounded. That you wanted to map something in the Hert to something that has bounded cohomology, and then roughly, and then you can upgrade it to the full functor from the coherent category. But here it doesn't happen. So I cannot upgrade it first.
So I mean, maybe this is somehow implied by this theorem here. At some point, as you were saying this stuff, I realized, right? Like somehow, you know, the thing on the left there, when you write perverse sheaves, we sort of know what to replace rep GLN with to get the full the equivariant derived category, you know, the Satake category.
Yes.
And so is it sort of obvious that this theorem implies that actually the Satake category maps down to character sheaves?
You mean derived Satake category? Or, so, sorry, can you repeat it again? So which well, theorem plus what?
So I think people usually say, like, you know, coherent sheaves on G dual shifted up by two, the derived Satake.
Yeah, so I like somehow derived Satake, I think, is an accessible from here. Because what I do, I actually map like pervious sheaves. And this is just a stupid, semi-simple category. A derived Satake category is not a derived category of this.
Yeah.
So this is, I guess the whole derived Satake category is inaccessible. At least I have no idea.